up to you and me to shine a guiding light and lead the way. United by our cause, we have the power to pursue what we believe. We'll achieve the realization of our dreams.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of New Horizons. I'm Vaughan Bennison. This week we continue the series on the human rights oration held in Melbourne in December. This time we hear the first part of the panel session, and it starts with Kristen Hilton, who's the Victorian Equal Opportunity and Human Rights Commissioner, and she's telling us about the people on the panel.
Marianne Diamond is the General Manager of Media Communications and Engagement at the National Disability Insurance Agency. In 2013, Marianne led the World Blind Union delegation during negotiations that led to the adoption of the Marrakesh Treaty to facilitate access to information for persons who are blind, visually impaired, or otherwise print disabled. A year later, she was awarded an Officer in the Order of Australia and most recently the Louis Braille Medal in recognition of her outstanding leadership to blind and partially sighted persons worldwide. Neil Duncan has been a professional musician for 35 years. Neil's also composed many film and television soundtracks and is a record producer. 3.5 years ago, Neil lost his arm to cancer. He thought he could no longer play, and then with the help of some great friends, a remarkable instrument was made for him in Amsterdam. And after working 2 years to master the one-handed saxophone, Neil is again a fully professional musician supporting his family through his passion. Neil was recently selected to be part of a Channel 4 promotional film for the Paralympics, and the soundtrack was recorded at the legendary Abbey Road Studios in London. Neil has an amazing story to tell. Juliet Burke is a partner of consulting at Deloitte Australia. She leads the Australian Diversity, Inclusion and Leadership Practice. Juliet's particular expertise is in helping organisations assess, develop and implement cultural change strategies with a focus on diversity, inclusion and flexibility. She regularly works with global executive teams to design and deliver leadership programs, including Deloitte's Inclusive Leadership Program. The panel is reflective or comprises of government, community and the arts, so it's a fantastic opportunity for us to have a conversation about inclusiveness and diversity within the workplace. Marianne, I'm going to start with you. The NDIA has been pretty groundbreaking in a lot of ways, but not least because my understanding is that 15% of the workforce are people living with a disability. How's that been achieved? And from your experience, what needs to change in other organisations so that we're properly and meaningfully including people with disabilities in the workplace?
So at the NDIA, right from the start, it was recognised that we need to practice what we're asking other people to do. People will know from the Productivity Commission work that led to the introduction of the NDIS, economic as well as social benefits were seen as a result of an NDIS. People getting work, people with disabilities, carers and also increased service providers needing to fill the space. So we actively sought to employ people with disabilities. So we have a attract, retain and support policy. We have this year employed 10 stepping into positions, so that's the Australian Network on Disabilities program, to give people with disabilities or place them with 150 hours of paid work, and often that leads to ongoing work. We introduced a graduate program for our agency, which is quite a new agency in Commonwealth Government, this year, and 12 graduates, five of whom are people with disability. And in 2017, in our graduate program, we will bring another 12 people in, and we've actively sought people with disability. We have a pilot program running for employment internships for people with intellectual disability. We've achieved accreditation from the Australian Network on Disability just recently as a confident, inclusive recruiter, so meeting some kind of in recognition that we are actively doing this. So there's still more work to be done with the agency, but I think some of those programs that we've actively sought to do and go out and find people with disabilities at all levels in the agency, not just all at the bottom level, We now have a few people in the senior executive service, which is quite, which is really important, and people who come from the sector who know the sector too. So I think it's about having that attitude to go out and do it, and then putting systems and processes in place to actually do it has been the success to date.
How has it changed in your professional experience as someone who's been employed with a disability for a long time, and are you hopeful about the future?
I fall into Graham's category, a person who has had a disability all their life, so I will help all of you when you only have certain numbers of years to appreciate disability as you age. But I, like Graham, started in the workforce a long time ago and had some kind of successes and not such good achievements along the way, but I've been fortunate enough to always been employed. In some ways, I think it's almost more difficult now. I think people are really, as Graham mentioned, you know, so risk averse. And my experience, both globally and here in Australia, in the area of employment, is attitudes is the big one. People think you can't do something. And successful employment is usually with an employer who's previously employed a person with disabilities, because we find they're far more open to doing it again. I think so that's the barrier. And an attitudinal is not just employers. Employers are people. It starts with the parents of someone with a disability who often has low expectations of for their child, and then therefore the child becomes someone who has low expectations of themselves. So I still think a fair bit of work needs to be done. Am I hopeful? Yes, I'm always hopeful. I'm an optimist. So I hope that these conversations will help too, that everyone is talking about it. So that's a big step forward.
Neil, unlike Marianne and Graham, your life changed just sort of 3.5-4 years ago, and probably you saw the world quite differently after your accident. Can you tell us a little bit about your story and whether or not you experienced some of those attitudinal barriers that Marianne and Graham have talked about?
Well, I was a fully professional musician, playing an instrument, a saxophone, that requires a lot of work with 10 fingers and 2 arms. And when I found out I had cancer, a very rare sarcoma in the bottom part of my arm, a very rare cancer called a sarcoma, and found out eventually that my arm would have to go, my initial thoughts, of course, were, that's the end of my music, that's the end of my passion, that's the end of my ability to support my family, and rightfully so. In our society, it's very hard to look when you've got such a strong, something so big missing from your life, how you can get through that. But some pretty miraculous things have happened for me. I'm from New Zealand, and in New Zealand we have a thing called a word called whānau. It's a Māori word, and it kind of means extended family, but it means a lot more than that. And what happened with me was this whānau kicked in. It was people from government departments. It was people from the Benevolent Society for Musicians. It was my colleagues. It was my family. It was the local community. All chipped in to try and get me through. And so I have been extremely lucky. And I guess for people with disabilities, this whānau concept is really, really important. Mm. I mean, it's what's got me through. And what happened was, when I woke up in hospital with no arm, my friend was standing next to me with a smile on his face, which didn't seem right. I thought maybe it was the morphine, but and he said, "Look, I've googled one-handed saxophone, and this instrument is a man in Amsterdam that is working on one." So that's where it all started, and it was extremely expensive. It was way out of my price range. And this is where the community kicked in. And I just feel there's so many passionate people in our society that are so passionate about supporting people with or without disabilities, but particularly with disabilities, that that's where the power was for me, was this incredible support, this incredible whānau that has been behind me right through this thing. And so the saxophone was developed over 1.5-2 years. I worked on it very hard. It's extremely hard. It's a whole new thing. And now I can tell my story again and have my passion back. So very lucky.
Congratulations. We were talking before we began about how important I think we both think the arts are in the human rights movement. And what are your lessons, I suppose, from what you've experienced over the last few years and how arts can be integral in human rights?
Well, artists and musicians are storytellers, really important storytellers in our society. I mean, can you imagine? Oh, we tell stories of love, of politics. We tell of our struggle, sex, all these important things that are part of the human condition. These stories are told by artists and musicians. Can you imagine Australia without its Indigenous artists, without those incredible paintings? Can you imagine Australia without its Nick Caves, without its Missy Higgins? It would be a barren place. It's our job to inspire. It's our job to question. It's our job to challenge. It's our job to tell stories. We don't. They aren't held in very high esteem in Western society. They're not valued as much as they should be, but they're incredibly important. They're our identity. They tell the story of what it is to be human. Mm. So I can't really. That's the importance of the arts. And so it's a basic human right to be able to tell those stories, whether you're disabled or not. Just because you're disabled doesn't mean you haven't. Aren't full of music or aren't full of song or aren't full of art. And if you are disabled, then you have every right to tell those stories, those really important stories. And it's a basic human right to be able to hear those stories. They're obviously powerful because when a government comes along that wants to oppress its people or hold back on human rights, the first thing it kills is the arts and music. Always, they're the first to go. So there's a fear there from governments or from people that do want to oppress and do want to stop human rights. So they are very powerful. With the saxophone, what has happened with this incredible instrument is it's now opened up because of people around the world are looking at this going, well, and not only around the world, people are looking at that and going, if it's possible to play the saxophone with one hand, let's start looking at other tools in the arts for people. And so there's a one-handed violin that's now being developed. There's a whole lot of, just because of that instrument, there's all these other instruments that are being developed for people with one hand so they can tell their story, which they have every right to do. And in fact, people with disabilities have often got much more of a story to tell. They've maybe got a story of struggle that other people haven't felt before. And those stories bring out compassion. They bring out... I've had so many people say to me, watching you is so inspiring. What you've done is you've made me rethink my life. You've made me change my priorities. And I used to inspire people with music. Now I inspire people kind of in a way. I had somebody call me up and say, oh, you don't know me, but I've just gone up, just leaving for a world trip tomorrow because I saw you play. And it's something I've always wanted to do, so I decided to go. And it's that influence you have on people. And people with disabilities have got such a story to tell, so let them tell it.
And we'll hear more of that interesting discussion next week. That's it for this week's edition of New Horizons. Blind Citizens Australia, as always, can be contacted on 1-800-033-660, 1-800-033-660, by email on bca@bca.org.au. If you'd like to donate, there are a myriad of ways you can do that. Have a look at the BCA website and that will give you more information. Don't forget the call for expression of interest for the CEO role closes on Monday the 9th of January. So if you haven't already got your expression of interest in, you're very likely too late. Hopefully we'll be hearing more on that in the next week or so. I'm Vaughan Bennison. Thanks for your company over the last 15 minutes. I'll talk to you again next week.
We'll achieve the realization of a dream. Of our dreams.